to the Feel Strong Fitness Podcast. My name is Justin McClintock, and this week we have Jorge Cretis on the podcast. Jorge is a dancer and choreographer who has a PhD in applied neuroscience and does a lot of work in cognitive training through physical training. A fascinating person. We discuss non-ordinary states of consciousness, how you can train your consciousness to optimize your state and your training, and how this powerful work can be applied to the rest of your life. This was both interesting and fun. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. Jorge Cretis is on the Feel Strong podcast. Jorge Cretis, welcome to the Feel Strong podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Justin.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have you. So before we get into it, because we were just talking before we started recording and got really excited and had to actually stop ourselves and remember to press the record button. Would you give a kind of a brief background on yourself to the listeners out there so they know where we're coming into this?
Of course. I was going to go, something that not many people know is I was going to go into the military. I was really, really interested when I was a kid. And unfortunately, because of an scoliosis, I couldn't. Therefore, I started doing sports science because I was very sporty, a very active kid. And in the second year of my university studies, I discovered dance totally by chance. I can't tell you the story if you're interested, but just totally by chance. And I really like it. I really enjoy. I started doing contemporary dance, which before that time, I was 22 at the time. I didn't even know what it was. And one thing took to another. It became my passion overnight. And I finished my sports science, but I dedicate my professional life to be a performer. I studied in the conservatoire back in Madrid in Spain, and then I was dancing as a professional dancer for many years, first in Spain, then in Belgium, and finally in the UK. Finally, because after performing for a number of years, I was kind of like headhunted to become a lecturer at the university, at the London Contemporary Dance School, which I developed a methodology. At the same time that I was teaching, I developed my PhD studies, my doctoral studies in performance presence. You know, when you see someone on a stage or in a competition or just an amateur athlete, that it's something really remarkable about how they are and what they are doing, regardless of the results. So I started researching what was that, and because I'm a control freak and I come from sports, if there is something that you can locate, it's something that you can train. So I developed the last 20 years on checking what is that state of consciousness associated to peak performance presence, what is the benefit associated to train those states of consciousness, and actually how you can train them. So that's basically who I am and what I do.
That is such an interesting way into all of this. Is performance presence the same as flow state or related to that?
Yes. I always consider that that's kind of like a spectrum. We normally consider nowadays with all the upgoing and upcoming mindfulness trends and sleep well and good habits, that it's something that is on and off. But actually, you are not thirsty suddenly. You realize that you are thirsty suddenly, but you are not in a flow state suddenly. There is a process that gets you there, and a flow state is a particular segment of the spectrum of states of consciousness. And there is something afterwards that it could be called beyond flow. And all that, it's right now, the umbrella term that we use is non-ordinary states of consciousness, because they are a state that you are in that is not ordinary, it's not how you are normally. So flow is one of those non-ordinary states of consciousness. But for us to understand it, yes. And the most exciting thing is that you can train that, and you can actually go beyond what flow can be considered.
That's a very exciting, even the idea of being able to train that is very exciting. Could you unpack a little bit? What are the, maybe talk slightly about what that flow state or that performance presence is, and then what are the benefits for people to even find this? Why should someone spend time pursuing this?
What I really like is that through the conduits of the body, we can actually, as you said, train that. So it's something that is not magical or sacred anymore. It's something sustainable, it's something reliable, and something that we can tap into it. And there is a book that I really like that is called Stealing Fire, that talks about those all non-ordinary states of consciousness and what they have in common. So for people to understand, those non-ordinary states of consciousness are those moments that you feel selflessness. There is something that you feel more than who you are or less than who you are. It's kind of like the self somehow disappear. It happens many times when you are sometimes watching an amazing landscape and somehow you blend with that. Or when you are running for a long period of time, it seems that you are not doing the effort anymore. It's happening by itself. The second characteristic is timelessness. You are doing something for a really long period of time, but it seems like really short, or somehow you don't really know how time passes. So there is a bend of the imperception of time. The third one is effortlessness. So yes, it seems like you are doing something, normally you are doing something that it's extraordinary, and it feels like it's something that it was okay, it was easy to do it. It's that feel of easiness. And the last one is richness, those moments in your life that are meaningful, that is not like, yeah, I went to, how many times, I don't know if you remember the last meal that you had on the month of October. Probably you don't, because it's something that it's ordinary, it happens, but you remember that race, that something happens and change your life, that match, that something happens. So it's all in this book, they call about STER, S-T-E-R, selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness, and richness. And that's how I talk about, you know that you are in those non-ordinary states of consciousness if you experience 1, 2, 3, or 4 of those characteristics.
That rings very, very true. I'm just thinking, you know, I was thinking back as you were describing that to moments in my life where I've held that, found that presence or found that flow state. And looking back, it always feels like at least some of these things, certainly the effortlessness and like, oh, things are just happening. Like I'm moving very quickly and very accurately and it feels very easy and it's enjoyable, but almost that selflessness, almost a feeling of being removed from it. Like it's almost like observing yourself doing something which is to some degree remarkable. You're like, oh, that is so interesting. This is just happening. And it really is a different degree of consciousness.
And it's something that it's branded in our memory. All of us, when we experience something like that, it's so meaningful that it's very rich. And that's the interesting part. When I go and teach these workshops of how to access those non-ordinary states of consciousness on purpose, at will, voluntarily, I always ask, this rings a bell, everyone has experienced that, raise your hand if you had. And everyone in the room from one reason or another raise their hands. And my next question is like, okay, raise your hand again if you can trigger that state of consciousness at will. And it's only 1 or 2 people out of 30 or 40 people that they do this, and almost hesitantly, you know, like, yeah, I'm not sure. Like, well, that's the way that we work here, how we can enter those non-ordinary states of consciousness on purpose through your physical activity.
When would people want to trigger those states? I think it's easy to see how that might come up for, a high performance athlete, you know, going into competition, whether it's a long game or like an Olympic weightlifter, like that moment on a platform. And certainly performers on stage generally have significant rituals to get themselves in that state, especially if they're doing, you know, multiple shows a week or even a day, dance, goodness, like so they can replicate that over and over and over, trying to translate that feeling to the audience. But how do people who are not those high level performers, why would they want to trigger the state in themselves?
That's a great question. I would tell you that there would be a number of reasons. Some of them are very pragmatic and some of them are a bit more spiritual or personal that I would consider more important, but both of them, each to their own. One of them is this non-ordinary state of consciousness help us to integrate information faster. So there are experiments in which people had to learn a language or develop certain skill. By doing this kind of work of accessing non-ordinary states of consciousness, the time that is reduced to integrate that information gets reduced between 60 to 80%. That's a lot, meaning that if you get, for example, imagine that you don't know how to skip rope. And then you want to learn that. Instead of spending 1 month trying to learn by developing these skills of entering those non-ordinary states of consciousness while you train, you might be able to learn in 2-3 weeks. So you actually are reducing half of the time. So that's the first one. It helps to integrate because you are creating kind of like a void in your nervous system and helps neuroplasticity. So actually you can integrate information better and faster. The second thing, which is related, it means that you can improve faster, meaning that if you want to work in hypertrophy, in accessing new skills, you want to integrate the team better in a way that if it's a sport, it's a team sport, that development happens faster and quicker because the information gets integrated deeper. And the other two reasons that I would say for me are much more important is how many times we walk home and we don't know how we arrive there, or how many times we start a session in the gym and it's like, well, I start, I finish, and I don't even know what I did because I was thinking about my emails, the shopping list, the problems that I have with kids. Well, I don't know about you, Justin, but I want to live my life every single second and not that something passed by and disappears. I am going to die, and I know that. That's the only certainty that I have. So I want to experience every single second of my life. So by having that selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness, and richness, I will make every single second count when I am doing something important. And the last thing that for me is very, very related is I want to experience joy. And when we talk about those moments in a race, in a training, in a match, that you experience that flow or those non-ordinary states of consciousness, normally are associated with joy. Even if there is discomfort or pain or sometimes suffering involved because the race is really difficult, the match, even if you are losing, but the joy of experiencing the experience fully, it's remarkable. And for me to be able to access that anytime you want, even if the situation, and even more important, if the situation is hard, it's priceless.
That sounds tremendous. And I'm sure everyone out there resonates with that idea of maybe not even realizing you're on autopilot. Just how did I get home? How am I here? What, I've been in the gym for 45 minutes. What have I actually done so far? Over and over and over again. And being able to pull your focus in. I actually talk with younger coaches about this all of the time when they're trying to create workouts or think about their next session for somebody. And if someone is writing a workout and answering their emails and making sure their social media is up and having a conversation and drinking some coffee and like explaining how much higher the quality of your work and your time can be, if you focus all of that down and really focus on the one thing, and not only will it be better and the quality will go up, but you will be faster, you'll be more efficient, everything gets more effective. And literally, if you take one at a time, all of them improve across the board instead of trying to flip 10 pans at once and not actually doing a great job with all of them, but somehow you're hustling, and that's something to be admired.
Totally. There is something else that I forgot to tell you, is actually how those non-ordinary states of consciousness happen. It's normally the nervous system gets the sympathetic and parasympathetic mechanisms activated at the same time. Therefore, normally in the way that we live, we have the sympathetic nervous system most of the time activated. We are aroused, we are excited, we are rushing through. And very little times we allow the parasympathetic mechanism to take over because of the life that we live. Even when we are sleeping, most of us don't sleep properly. Therefore, our sympathetic nervous system is still activated. By training your nervous system to activate both at the same time, you are actually regulating to trigger one, the other, or both of them when the body needs, when the situation needs that will. So actually has amazing benefits for health, health benefits as well.
That's tremendous. We do a lot of work with the nervous system, especially with clients who are in pain, especially people like chronic pain people, as well as coming back from injury, returning to sport, and especially around breath work, like deliberately modulating your state and, you know, turning switches in your nervous system off. We're not denying that your pain exists. We're not denying that anything is happening, but we can put you in a different state for a short period of time so we can do this really valuable work to make you stronger and more stable and more capable and all of these things.
And then you will return to that initial state, but you can take four steps forward before you slide back one. And for and that breathwork and nervous state regulation we found to be extremely powerful, even for people who it didn't necessarily jump out as the obvious tool. You know, people who I have a very strong weightlifter I'm working with right now, and we found like a small amount of state regulation radically improves their sessions. And they were very, very skeptical, I think is fair to say, leading into it. But it's an incredible tool.
I understand that many people are skeptical at the moment because there is such a veil of mystery about flow and about spirituality, mindfulness, meditation, that everything gets muddled up. And I really like to talk to people who look at it from a very pragmatic neurophysiology point of view, meaning that if A has B, B will have C, therefore A has C. And when you're talking about the breath work, it's fantastic. When you do box breathing or double sight, the effect in your parasympathetic nervous system is immediate, which is fantastic. So there are many other things that we can help. And regulate of pain, it's something that I'm really, really interested in because sometimes the self-preservation mechanisms of the body make us perceive that the levels of pain are actually higher than what they are. Just because, yeah, there is a scar in our brain that tells us if you got hurt there, be careful because you will hurt again. And therefore the perception of pain is not real. By calibrating those senses, those states of consciousness, you are also calibrating the reality of what you're experiencing. Therefore, it's not about pushing the limits beyond what you can do. It's about pushing the limits until where you can do for real and not to stay two repetitions less, or what is more dangerous, two repetitions more, because that will harm you for real.
And calibrating that will also let you, you're touching on something which we've covered before a bit, that pain is essentially emotional. Pain is the emotion of reacting to this significant irritation that's happening and made significantly worse by uncertainty. So if we can bring some certainty and start controlling our emotional reaction, the pain literally decreases. It actually goes down to the point where we can take it potentially to zero, sometimes for a short period of time, sometimes forever, by manipulating these things.
Totally and completely. I don't know if you agree with me. That's not a survey that I have done, but as a dancer and as an athlete and many of my colleagues, I realized that we can inflict much more workload and therefore kind of like pain than if you go to a physiotherapist or an osteopath and not knowing what they're going to be doing, it hurts before they do it. And actually, it's quite interesting, that of self-perception. You know what's going to happen, therefore you know the amount of...
Yeah, it's that certainty and that feeling of control. And I complete, I mean, I'm on record saying I think dancers can take more abuse than anybody else. Like, they work harder, they go longer. Every dancer I've ever met is just terribly hurt all of the time and still performing at a very, very high level. I'm not saying it's the healthiest way to live, it is baked so deep into that culture to be able to keep going with things that would take down certainly most people, and I would argue the vast majority of other athletes.
And luckily, the culture is changing. I'm doing my best to change it. But dancers normally, because it's considered more an art than a sport, therefore we don't use the periodization, the right tools of improving workload, supercompensation, all the principles that we should be using. Therefore, we endure more than we should. And actually, we damage our body in the ways that it could be easily preventable. Luckily, also, dancers' body are extremely versatile. So I've seen horrible situations in which an athlete that is much more used to work in two dimensions or fixed patterns of movement with a fall or a tackle, they had a very dramatic injury, and dancers going through similar motions because they were able to reorganize themselves, the damage was less. So yeah, pros and cons, but yeah, I'm trying to change the dance world one step at a time as well.
Good. It really needs it. It's, you know, one of those things. And this is the same thing in gymnastics and a bunch of these places where art and sport meet each other, where there's so much of, well, we've done it this way for 150 years. So why would we change now? And you're like, but look at the bodies of the 12-year-olds just all over the place. Can't you? Certainly we can make this better. Back to optimizing state? Because I'm sure people are out there dying to know how they can get to work on this. So how would, and you know better than me, I don't know if it's better to speak about this generally or specifically, but how would someone going about trying to train this in themselves, getting to the point where they can kind of turn this on and turn this off at will?
That's a very good question. And of course, it's a training. It's like learning a new skill. So if you like to learn juggling or football or even running, it takes time. Many people at the moment, it's just, I put my shoes and I go running, or I put my trainers and I go on the bicycle. And there is a technique for that. In this particular case, there is techniques that we can teach that I do in my online program or when I do workshops, in which, yes, we start with breath work and we do certain patterns of movement that through my research, I know that 95-97% of the people will experience at will those non-ordinary states of consciousness, those selflessness, timelessness, effortless, and richness. So by locating them through those exercises, which some of them require reflex work, so throwing and catching objects, repetition, it's something that helps a lot. I work a lot with the vestibular system, so how we do repetitive movement that challenge your vestibular system, but because it's repetitive, you can get used to that, and then when you sustain that for a period of time, your sympathetic and parasympathetic triggers at the same time. I'm talking about, for example, spinning mm-hmm. on the spot for a while, like kids do all the time. When you sustain that for more than 7-8 minutes in a way that I teach it, it triggers sympathetic and parasympathetic. So I have a library of exercises that when I go to workshops or through the online training, people can locate at will. And 95-97% of the people will experience that flow state when they do these exercises for 5, 10, 15 minutes. Once we have located those states of consciousness and we feel how they feel, then we can start applying different principles to bring them to any other activity that we do. Those principles in my training program, if anyone is interested, they can check the website or the book. They are kind of like 9 stages. And those 9 stages, do you want me to go into those 9 stages?
Sure, let's talk about it.
So the first one is how to enter into those states of consciousness. And how to enter, you have to fulfill 3 conditions. The first one is to have the skills to do what you need to do. So for example, I consider myself, I'm a good dancer and I have good presence, but I'm not classically trained. So if you could put me to do Swan Lake or the Corsair or Cinderella, I will never have that presence because I don't have the skills. So first of all, it's important that you are strong enough, flexible enough, and you know the patterns of movement that you are going to perform, at least at the level that you need to. The second one is collateral training, meaning that you have to have an environment in which you feel safe. Safety is the most important aspect for you to trigger the parasympathetic mechanism of the nervous system. Therefore, the environment that supports you, that you are not playing in a field, that you have nails sticking out, that you don't know what's going to happen. And people argue, but there are situations in there are foreseen circumstances or danger in which you trigger that flow. It's just because you have trained that unforeseen circumstances. Like, for example, in American football, you know that you might be kicked at any moment in your face or hockey. But because you train those situations, you feel safe because, once again, you have the skills. That in order to enter. The third thing is somehow demystify the art of being in those non-ordinary states of consciousness. Demystifying is just a process that by experiencing over and over, you prove yourself that it's nothing sacred about it, something mystery. It's not Harry Potter world. So therefore, by proving yourself once and over again that that's possible, you will be able to enter that at will. So that's the conditions to enter. How do you stay in those states of consciousness a bit longer? Well, the first one, it's something that I really like, and it's games are very serious things. So it is not about making a game of everything that you do. It's about being playful. And in English language, it's a beautiful word that we don't have in Spanish. It's play. You can play a game, but actually you can play a guitar or you can play a role. Actually, play, it's beyond games. So having that curiosity, that capacity of bending the rules, having that capacity of being playful, that's something really, really important. The second skill that we train is unitasking. When you see someone driving a car, playing a piano, playing football, there are many little tasks that are involved in everything that they do. But they don't do all those things at the same time. When you are driving a car, you are not concentrating on the wheel and then the mirror and then changing the gears if it's manual and then talking to the person beside and following the sat nav. You are doing all those things at the same time. So therefore, you are unitasking. It is different than automatization, because please, anyone who is listening to this podcast, don't go home on your car in automatic pilot, because you might not see that dog crossing the street. Mm-hmm. We take decisions in real time, but there is those all those tasks that comprise in one task, which is that playing football, running, playing basketball, whatever is the task that you're doing. So we help the brain to incorporate all those tasks into one. And the third one, which is something that I really like, it's something that I call the doer. And if you don't do the activity, no one else can do it for you. So it's how you train that commitment. That is kind of like the last step of, yes, now I want to be there. I want to trigger that state of consciousness. In dance, it's really easy. For those who are a little bit familiar, you can see someone just doing the steps and then someone else doing the same steps but dancing. And all in our mind, probably we have the difference already. So that decision, not only doing the steps, but dancing, is what we train as well. It's that commitment, that being able to go through the threshold and those actions became something else. And then finally, just to make it short, it's important to exit those non-ordinary states of consciousness. It's important to exit because, like in any sport, it's important to rest in order to increase the workload the next day. It's important to reflect what we've done in order to improve what we haven't done correctly, or even better, to repeat the things that we've done correctly, which is something that we forgot. And as part of that exiting, it's something that I really like, which sometimes we forget, which is celebrating our successes. Before this, the recording, we were talking about how many of us forget to realize the achievement that we do every single day. And sometimes we think about the person we were 10 years ago. Well, that's a safety mechanism, because if 9 things go well and 1 thing goes wrong, we just tend to concentrate in that thing that goes wrong because it might damage us, put our survival at risk. So the only mechanism that human has, or one of the most important one, is by celebrating those 9 things that we did well, we give them equal importance than the one that we did in wrong. So it's important to not only acknowledge, but to go through a physical process of celebrating them. And that's a little bit, in a nutshell, the training.
That's beautiful. How to enter, how to stay there, and then how to successfully exit, including celebrating that you just did this, you know, potentially challenging thing, very useful, very effective, but not always easy. And yes, we were talking especially about people who've had significant setbacks or dealing with pain or chasing this image of themselves for 10 years ago. And often these people are having significant success right now and doing remarkable things and making progress. And they are absolutely blind to it because they're focused on a completely different horizon. And I think this idea of becoming a little more present with what they're actually doing right now and how they're moving forward and all of that could be tremendously useful for a lot of people in that way.
I fully agree. And it's the key to success. To success and to stay in the activity, which at the end of the day, to stay physically active is the success, is the major victory that one can have. You are not going to repeat. You are not going to continue doing something that you feel like a failure all the time, that you feel that you are rubbish at it. But if you are able to acknowledge every day the victories that you had that day, you want to go back to the training next day and to your exercises. So that's where we go back and circle back to the first idea. It's like, I really want to have joy and to experience joy with this work, because by experience joy, that will keep me doing the things I love and the things that are useful for me and my community.
I love that. Now, all of this work, especially, I think it's beautiful that you're kind of demystifying how this works and the connection between mind and body and how you can train both of these things. I know you also do a lot of work outside of pure physical performers, like yes, working with dancers, athletes, people in sports, but you also work with, you get brought and do workshops for corporate people. And I think I saw that you did one for Sir Paul McCartney and all kinds of folks out there. How do you get those people to apply this in their life? Or how do you show them that this is something that someone who wants to be the best salesperson in their company and they are relatively indifferent to their, you know, physical prowess, how does this apply to them?
Yes, that's correct. I really like and really enjoy working with entrepreneurs, people who work in an office that they might or they might not familiar with their physicality, but because everyone has a body and everyone goes through life using our bodies in one way to the other, in the way that you present to others, in the way that you talk, in the way that you stay in your room. So I'm going to give you some examples to be a tiny bit more graphic of how this can be applicable. We work with some people, for example, that they encounter the same problem over and over in the business. And when they encounter the same problem, normally they try the same solution over and over, or at least a very narrow number of solutions to the same problem. By working in those states of consciousness, actually what we are doing is opening the creativity. And therefore, they are able to find new ideas that they might be stored really far back in their brains or make connections that before they were not there to find new solutions for the problems. Therefore, they overcome those obstacles and they became more successful at the situations that they had. We had lots of people that are having problems with negotiating. And one of the problems with negotiating is being curious and being playful about the other person's stance and what is being really said in the room beyond those words, because we know that 60%, 70% of our communication is nonverbal. So by being more attuned to your own physicality and your own state of consciousness, we work on compassion and empathy. By doing that, it's something that you don't even have to think about it, but you will feel how the other person feels. Therefore, you became a much better negotiator. Politicians out there, just listen to this. This might be very, very useful for you.
And also anyone in any relationship, right? Because what you're describing is really being present and actually listening, which I hope I'm also doing with you. Like, this is one of the things I found about the podcast I like so much. I really like turning everything off and just listening to what someone is saying and not, I was talking about this with an actor the other day. When you're talking to someone and you realize they're just waiting for their turn to speak, you like all of the life goes out of the conversation. It's no fun. You're like, oh, you've got a list of questions and you've got some place to be. And you're just waiting for me to stop talking. Okay. As opposed to what you're describing and actually reacting and being organic and being in that moment. And one, people will feel it. People notice it. People are aware when they're being listened to. People are aware when they change their tone slightly and you react a little bit to it. And they dig into that and it will let you be more effective, even in the most cold-hearted way. Someone who just wants to be better at negotiating to you know, get a little more money next year, letting yourself be present with that person and in the conversation will make you vastly more effective at this kind of work.
I don't know if people will be able to see this video, but while you are talking, most of the time I try to make notes because brains are made to create ideas, not to store ideas. So you were spot on when you were saying that as soon as you start talking, I am already thinking about what I am answering to you. So I will miss the 70% of the argument that you gave afterwards. So I like to take notes because like this, I don't have to remember that. And then I have to go through listening to everything that you just said. And talking about the notes, when you were talking about people will be able to check the different emphases, how people change the words. Actually, what I really like about this kind of work, like any other work that we do physically, it gets integrated in our body that we don't have to think about it. You can see two different people running for the bus that it's about to leave, and you will see which one of them is physically active and which one is not physically active. and they don't have to think about it. It's integrated in their body. For us dancers, we enter in a room many times and they ask, you're a dancer, you're something like that, because it's something about our posture. It's integrated. So when we work through your non-ordinary state of consciousness, or the last thing I'm going to be saying, your consciousness in general, you don't have to think about it anymore because it gets integrated. And that's what I wanted to contribute to the last thing that you said. Everything, when you are with your partner, when you are in conversations, when you are racing, when you are in a match, when you are doing anything else, Justin, what would you think is the common denominator of all those situations?
I mean, you're trying to accomplish something and pushing yourself in that, in all of those moments.
Yes. Let's put a situation that you're watching the TV, you're not trying to accomplish anything. Mm-hmm. What that situation will also have in common with the previous ones?
Oh, I'm not sure. I don't know.
That's a question for the listeners as well. Well, that is not a tricky question. The common denominator that all our experiences has is the self. It's me who is living those experiences. So actually, when we want to improve our creativity or our racing or our empathy or our stance or anything that is related to anything, when we just work in our self, the self, the S-E-L-F, we are working in everything. And actually, that's what the basic of consciousness is, what it makes to be me. So actually, when we found ways to reliably and sustainably work in our consciousness, we can direct that work to absolutely anything that it's around us. And I don't want to try to be fundamentalist or just magical, saying that this is the answer to all the problems. But definitely it's one of the answers to all the problems. Not the answer, one of the answers to all the problems. Because we are working at the root of what all the experiences has in common, which is the individual.
And it's working on something foundational to yourself. And I think it's obvious if you say it in a way sort of like this, if you make yourself better, you will be better at almost everything you do, right? And then we can take those, we can get very specific and work on those tiny little skills and those tiny little tools. But if you bring a focused, present, aware, capable person to any of those, it's going to always go better than a distracted, not fully present, sort of not complete human being.
Spot on.
Jorge, this has been an absolute joy. Tell people, where should they go to find out about you, to take the workshops, all of these things?
The best way is Instagram. It's always the easiest one, and it's Crecis, C for Charlie, R for Romeo, E for Echo, C for Charlie, I for India, S for Sugar, and everyone can find me there. And I always put the links to workshops, publications, and everything. I will pass you the links if you want to put other links of publications, books, or other interviews in the program notes for people to expand their interest. But yeah, reach out, because I'm always interested in hearing how can I help, what people need, how we can support them. And if I can, that's why I'm here.
I love it. We will put all of that stuff in the show notes, including your Instagram handle. This has been wonderful, Jorge. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Justin, thank you very much for your invitation. All the best.
Thank you so much for listening to the Feel Strong Fitness podcast. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Leave us a 5-star rating if you have the time. That makes a big difference. DM us on Instagram at FeelStrongFit. Any questions if you just want to pick our brain. If you'd like more info, the website is feelstrong.me. We value effectiveness, individualization, and empathy. If you want to see what it's like to have an expert in the field really listen and hear what you need to build you the perfect program to get you where you want to go, today is the perfect time to get started. We look forward to hearing from you, and thank you very much.